Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org. Hey, welcome back to the Leading LDS podcast. My name is Kurt Frankum, your host. And one thing you may not know about me, I never iron my white Sunday shirt because I just put a suit coat on. What's the point? Anyways, I digress. In this interview, we talk with Carl and Melody Hull, and who live in Highland, Utah. Now, Carl is actually Bishop Hull, and he has an incredible story. I first came across his name in a blog post that was being passed around on the social medias. And he had a very inspiring story about his journey through being a priesthood leader, but still reaching out to the LGBT, gay, and lesbian community. And a lot of the influence came from a past guest on the Leading LDS podcast. His name is Joseph Stith. He was currently the president of North Star, and the episodes that I've done with the North Star community are just fantastic. And you can, I'll link to those on the show notes of this episode. But nonetheless, that North Star and others have were instrumental in influencing Bishop Hull and reaching out and having a change of heart a little bit with regard to some of his prejudices to the LGBT community. And he wasn't vile or mean, but there was a change nonetheless. And as you listen to his story, I hope you find it inspiring as well and gain ideas about how you can reach out to those that are experiencing same-sex attraction. So let's get on to his story. Here's my interview with Carl and Melody Hull. Today, we're in Highland. Is that what this place, this city is? Highland, Utah, with Carl and Melody Hull. How are you two?
We're doing great. Good. Thanks.
Good. Now, I appreciate you allowing me into your home. You have a beautiful home here. We were talking about your beautiful backyard, and I'm getting the itch to get out of my condo. So this is maybe a neighborhood I need to look into. I'd love to be in your ward, Bishop Hull. You know,
we can find you a spot.
Nice. Very good. So let's just start by getting to know you a little bit, and then we'll jump into how we got connected and why it is that I want to hear your story. So where, we'll start with you, Carl. Where are you originally from?
I was raised in Heber City, Utah, and then moved to Orem and graduated from Orem High School. And then went to BYU in a mission to Chile. And then we've lived, for the most part, in Utah our whole lives, other than 3 years in St. Louis.
Oh, wow. What were you doing in St. Louis?
We're still not sure.
Nice. Very good.
We went out there. I did some schooling out there. I was working for a job out there that wasn't really going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those, not sure what I'm ready to do with my life. And so we came back and finished up at BYU and got my life started. So.
Great. And Melody, how about you? Where are you from?
I'm from Carlsbad, California. It's in San Diego County.
Cool. And a lifelong member of the church?
Yes.
Okay. Great. And as well for you, Carl?
Yes, I am.
Cool. All right. Pretty traditional upbringings in the gospel.
Yes.
We're pretty bland and pretty normal.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So where did this romance begin? Was it at BYU? Are you the typical BYU couple?
No, we're not.
Where did you first meet?
When I was on my mission, I'd been out for a year, and a sister missionary came up to me and said, "Hey, Elder Hull, do you have a girlfriend?" And my first thought was, this is the girl my dad warned me about.
Oh.
And so as rudely as I could, I said, no, and I'm not looking for one either.
Okay.
And she said, no, not for me. I have a sister I'd like you to write to. And she whipped out a picture of her sister, and my companion said, Elder, if you don't write to her, I'm going to.
Oh, nice. So he jumped on the opportunity.
I jumped on it. We wrote for 18 months before we ever met. She was actually on a mission at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And we got together 18 months later, and it happened pretty fast after
that. Well, that's great. So where did you serve your mission, Melody?
In the Florida Tallahassee mission.
Very nice. Great. Was it Spanish speaking or no?
Just okay. Southern drawl.
Southern drawl. Very nice. And so do you still use your Spanish, Carl?
Not a lot. I did with my previous work, but not very much anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I've served my mission in Sacramento, Spanish speaking. So, but my Spanish could be better. That's for sure. And so so you've lived in this home for about 20 years, did you say?
About 18 now.
Oh, great. Great. And how long ago were you made the bishop?
Just over a year. It was late August, early September of 2015.
So you hit that year mark. You've got everything figured out. You're ready to go. You've done things once. You're ready to do it again.
I just did my very first funeral yesterday. So
wow. How did it go?
I think it went okay.
Okay.
People were crying. I'm not sure if that's a good sign or not.
Right. Well, that's typical at a funeral. It's the normal day to day. It's when the chili cook off. If they're crying at the chili cook off, that's a problem. So what? Maybe tell us that story. How were you called as bishop?
I've actually served in three bishoprics before this, and then I served on the High Council for almost 6 years, and then our other bishop, he'd been in there for a while, and we were. I guess they just needed someone else to take it.
So, nice.
We didn't do anything particularly special. Or
you didn't fill out the application?
No, we didn't ask for it. Didn't campaign for it at all.
Nice. So was it a simple phone call to the stake offices one night?
And yeah.
Then there the call came?
It was actually the day after our son's wedding reception in our backyard.
Oh, wow.
We got a call that day and said, could the stake president meet with you tomorrow morning? And it was interesting because I had just told my wife, I said, boy, once we get through today, life's going to get real simple.
And the heavens heard you say that. Huh?
Apparently so.
Nice. So what was your reaction, Melody, when you heard the call of Bishop? I'm sure they asked for your support there.
Yes. I wasn't too surprised. I think he's worthy and
yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't really surprised. Mm-hmm.
So how's the first year been for you, sitting alone in the pews and all that comes with bishop wife?
You know, I'm used to that, so.
Okay. With all the bishoprics in the past, right?
Yeah, no, surprisingly, it's gone well. He was very busy as a high counselor, so I really didn't notice much of a change
nice.
In his schedule.
Nice.
One interesting thing that happened is the morning that we were sustained as a bishopric, I sat down with my three children that were left at home here, and we told them. And the 14-year-old started crying, the 12-year-old started laughing, and the 10-year-old couldn't care less. It was nice. We had every single reaction that you could think of.
Wow, interesting. I guess they show their support in different ways as well. So, well, great. And the reason, you know, I do a lot of how I lead interviews where we dive into a specific calling, but this one is definitely different. I first came across your name in a blog post that you wrote that's, I guess, in the Mormon bloggernacle has sort of gone viral, you could say, and it got, you know, I saw it a lot on social media and such. Do you remember the title of that article?
My Journey of Understanding, I think, or something like that.
But I'll link to that article so that it's available to read because it's such a touching story. And maybe I just want to kind of have you tell that story and go through, and Melody, you can help fill in the missing details and things or tell from your perspective how it's impacted you. But, you know, in regards, I have a series of interviews with the North Star board members and some of their leadership there. And even before that, I did an interview with bishops. Former bishops who all experience same-sex attraction. And I thought it was a great episode, got a lot of good feedback. I think it was the top episode listened to of that year that it was published a couple years ago. And I would encourage anybody to go check that out. But, you know, we're always, as we live in this culture, in this world, where obviously the LGBT community, individuals that experience same-sex attraction, those that are gay, however they want to define themselves, you know, they have a presence in the world, and that presence is welcomed, and it's more prominent than maybe it was 30 years ago. And so how do we respond to that as leaders in our LDS culture? You know, there's a transition happening there, and again, it's not in support of any particular political point or anything, but nonetheless, there's a transition there. So take us back to where does the story begin with you in regards to this subject?
Okay. I guess it begins, I'll just cover the first 40 years of my life or 45 years, I guess. I was just raised being taught both at school and in my neighborhood and my family that being gay was evil. Mm-hmm. And people who were gay, they had succumbed to evil, and they had either become evil or they had something evil happen to them that turned them that way, or something happened to them.
Yeah.
And
because it wasn't God's doing.
No, yeah. God would never send anybody right. to the earth like that. So that's how I viewed gay people, and that they were just plain evil. And if they were gay, that's all I had a closed mind. That's what they were.
End of story. Right.
And about 2 years ago, and this went on for a long time. There's the people I worked with at work. I had some people that I worked with that were gay, and I knew that I should be kind and decent to them, but I still figured they were evil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I will be kind to them, I tried to be, but I wasn't always, as we'll talk about here in a bit. But about 2 years ago, I was on the High Council in our stake, and our stake president invited a brother by the name of Joseph Stith, and I have permission to use his name.
Oh, cool.
Joseph came to our stake and made a presentation to the stake leadership, and at the very beginning of his presentation, he said, "I am gay. I am a former bishop," and I'm looking at him like, this is weird. This is a bizarre individual in front of us.
Yeah, and I should stay here. The Joseph was actually, he's been on the podcast a couple times. I think he's the acting president of North Star moment. And but he was one of those bishops I had on that experienced the same-sex attraction and is gay. So
yeah. And so he made his presentation, and during that presentation, my heart started to change, because for the first time, I looked at someone who was gay with compassion and looked at them as a decent person, as opposed to, oh, you must be evil, you must be horrible. And that was a turning point in my life.
So was it in that moment when that change happened, did you feel like it was just the spirit of the meeting, or was there certain perspectives and things he said during that training that kind of gave you a new paradigm?
I think both. Certainly the spirit was the overriding factor, because as he was speaking and bearing testimony and talking about his experience, the spirit was in the room testifying of truth. And for me to listen to someone saying, I was born this way, I wasn't changed this way, I didn't make a series of bad choices that turned me this way, I came this way. The spirit was in the room as he was saying that. And for the first time, I thought, I think that's true. Hmm. I think he literally came this way. And then he talked about his experiences of trying to reconcile how he had come to this world and the teachings of the gospel and what his reality was. And so for the first time, I looked at someone like, wow, that would be tough. That would be really tough to try to reconcile what the church teaches with what you're really truly experiencing, not because you did something evil, but because you truly experienced that. And that for me was just a real eye opener, something I had never thought of before. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that same day, or maybe a little bit later that day, I came home and I had a daughter who had just gotten home from a mission in Germany. And I had told her many times, I said, I pity the poor man that comes to ask me for your hand in marriage, because he's going to get the interview of his life. Right. And I that afternoon, I sat down with my daughter, and my wife was there as well, and I said, I have another question I'm going to ask your future husband.
Oh, boy.
She said, oh, what's that? And I said, I'm going to ask him if he's ever experienced same-sex attraction. And my daughter looked at me like, what?
She's never dating
really
again. Do
you think I would ever bring someone home like that? And she said, well, what if he was? And I said, well, then we would have to talk about that, but I would be okay with it. And she looked at me like, Dad, you have lost your marbles. And I could see that I was changing in my viewpoints, because my viewpoints had been instilled into my children, and they had the viewpoints that I had instilled into me,
yeah.
And I could tell that we were not on the same page. And so I kind of let that one go at that point, figured, well, we're going to have some more talks about this. So that's really where it all got started, was probably two and a half years ago when Brother Stith came and spoke to our stake.
Yeah. And I know those that want to reach out to Joseph Stith or hear his story, he has told a couple of times on the Leading LDS podcast, and I'll link to those episodes so that you can hear that. It's a powerful story and again, gives a great perspective on somebody, especially someone who's been a leader in this church, but still experiences that.
I may want to mention one more thing. One of the reasons I was so interested in going to this session at the stake to begin with was because when I served as young men's president about 12 years ago, I had a group of young men that I worked with. Two of them now have since left the church and have come out as gay. And I still care about those young men, and I try to love them. They're not young anymore. They're now in their early 30s. Mm. But they're good people. And I just all the time had figured, well, I guess they just succumbed to evil is what they did. And I started to look at these two young men for the first time thinking, I don't think they succumbed to evil. I think they came this way. And they were struggling. I had no idea they were struggling. And the entire time that we were together in Young Men's, they were good young men. They served missions. They served honorable, good missions. And they're still good people. They're serving in the world. They are living upstanding lives. They live a gay lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to try to understand them a little bit better. And that situation or that meeting with Brother Stith helped me to understand their story a little bit better, because I, for the first time, realized that they were trying to reconcile this exact same thing their whole lives, and that Brother Stith had been trying to reconcile. And I understood and had a lot more love and compassion for them. Before, I was probably just disappointed, and now I'm so disappointed that they left the church. I'm so disappointed that they pursued a gay lifestyle. And I started to feel like, no, I still love these guys.
Yeah.
And shame on me for judging them. Shame on me for not reaching out to them the way that they needed to be loved and reached out to.
Yeah. And really, it's not your role to be disappointed. It's our role to love, right? And
yes.
And that's tough. I mean, because you can't really stop disappointment. Of course, we all have had experienced the blessings of living a life according to the commandments we've been given through prophets, seers, and revelators. And you know, it's been wonderful for us, and so of course we want that for everybody and to experience some of those same blessings. But to just come to the conclusion that, well, I'm just going to love them even though they've made these decisions, right? I'm thinking about if a stake president is listening and thinking, what was this meeting they had, you know, with the bishops? Maybe talk to us just what was this meeting? How was it set up? What role did your stake president play in that? Because obviously, I feel like in this meeting, not only was it spiritual, not only did Brother Stith have some great perspectives to share, but by having a meeting like that, your stake president was sort of giving you permission as a leader to be open to what he has to say, right? So maybe tell us just about that meeting and what it was like.
Oh, sure. Our stake president, no question, he created the conditions for this learning to take place in our stake, and he very proactively searched out someone that could come and speak. When he told us that we were going to have a discussion, a very frank discussion about same-sex attraction, I just assumed that there would be some professional counselor who would come and talk and share, you know, this is how you handle it, this is how you speak with someone who's experiencing same-sex attraction. That's what I thought the meeting was going to be.
Yeah.
When Brother Stith stood up and said, I'm gay, and I'm going to tell you my story, I was like, wow, this is not what I was expecting at all. But our stake president was definitely expecting it, and he wanted us to hear this message. He's been our stake president for about 2.5 years now, and from the very beginning, his mission and goal has been that everyone in our stake, there is a place for you here, no matter if you're having doubts, whether you feel same-sex attraction, if you're wealthy, if you're not wealthy, if your marriage is in a mess, if your marriage is good, regardless of your situation in life, there is a place for you in this church, and we want you here. And this was a part of that effort to try to make everyone feel welcome.
Sounds like I got to get him on the podcast here. It's
I would highly leader. Recommend it.
So was this a typical, like the monthly bishopric meeting you had, you know, stake bishopric, or was this a special, hey, we're meeting at this time?
This was a special meeting. The High Council was invited. All of the bishoprics were invited. And all of the stake council, I guess all the stake leaders, all the auxiliary leaders were invited. Nice. And we held it in the Relief Society room, and it was clear full. So there were probably about 60 to 70 people who were there. And Brother Stith spoke the entire time with President Zhu Xia, speaking for maybe 5 or 10 minutes at the most.
Nice. Great. So again, you talk about your the interaction you had with your daughter, but for you, Melody, what was the, did he come home and he was on cloud nine talking about this new topic? You think, where is this coming from?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. He came home and he was passionate about this topic and, you know, telling us about the things that he had learned that evening. And we have got to love these people. And I was raised the same way, that they must have succumbed to something and chosen to follow an evil path. But so I kind of was shocked at how passionate he was about what he had learned. And he was trying to tell us in a nutshell. And my daughter and I were like, whoa, this is not right.
Yeah.
And we weren't prepared for that message, and especially in the way that he was delivering it to us that evening. So,
and that's tough, because I mean, you go to these spiritual meetings, and I'm sure we've all been in spiritual meetings. We come home and try and, in a nutshell, communicate the spirit, the message, and it just doesn't work as well. It's like, you just had to have been there, right? But you can't, you know, we can't drag Joseph into everybody's house, though he may be willing. He's such a nice guy. So how did it unfold from there? When did you finally get, okay, I sort of see what you're talking about?
Well, I think it was, then he decided to kind of just gradually invite me to different podcasts and things that he was, different blogs and things that he was viewing. And he'd say, Melody, just come and look at this interview. And I'd sit down and I'd listen to a story. And it seemed like almost every evening he was on his computer and he was listening or doing something. And I said, what are you working on? And he said, I'm just listening to these interviews and just trying to really become educated and learn more about this topic.
Nice.
And the more that he was learning, you know, the more he wanted to share with me. And so then I started to listen and to read. And anyway, that was a turning point for me too, to realize that, you know what, I really do believe that there are many people who were born with these tendencies. And then my heart went out to them too. And so my heart was being softened, but it's definitely been a journey.
Yeah. Any specific resources after that meeting, you sort of went online to see what other, I mean, there's the MormonEngaged.org, the church has produced. Were you looking for those types of resources, or what was it you were looking for?
Yes. I spent a lot of time on the North Star homepage. And then the Voices of Hope, listened to a lot of their stories. And those were the most eye-opening for me, because I really wanted to understand what these people's experience has been like. And so I listened to, I don't know, 10, 15, maybe even 20 different stories, listened to all of them. And then at the same time, I wanted to make sure that my thinking was 100% in alignment with the church.
Yeah.
I did not want to be heading down a road that was inappropriate or incorrect. And so I read every single word on MormonEngaged.org. I listened to every video that was on MormonEngaged.org, because I wanted to be 100% in compliance. That was my goal from the very beginning. And that's the thing that was really interesting to me, as I learned and listened and really spent the time, I recognized that many of the apostles had spoken very plainly about this. I just hadn't picked up on it.
Yeah.
I hadn't picked up on the fact that we were supposed to be more loving and more kind and more considerate and more understanding than I was being. And I recognized that I needed to catch up to where the apostles already were.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's encouraging when, you know, you're excited about this, you felt the spirit of it, but you think, wait a minute, am I being deceived here? You know, so to get that confirmation from our leaders that, you know, this is what they've been saying, you know, finally to internalize it a little bit there. So between that, what you were reading online, you share it with your wife, what you're reading and coming across, and you're having this, your heart's growing, and you're, you know, having more empathy for these individuals. Where does it go from there?
Okay. So that happened, like I say, a couple of years ago. And then just over a year ago, I was called as bishop. And
so that, when you went to that meeting, you were going as a high council member.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so nothing really came of it other than I was educating myself and learning more and more throughout that time. Mm. And then when I was called as bishop, after about 2 or 3 months, I started to get the feeling like I need to talk to my ward about this topic, specifically about being very open and understanding. And so but I was a brand new bishop and thought, nah, I probably shouldn't do that quite yet. So I don't want to be the rogue bishop that gets written up about in the Ensign. Right. So I just put it off for a while. And then, so after about 6 months, I started, those feelings were definitely strong that I needed to talk to my ward about this. And so I approached the ward council at this time and said, I think we need to have a discussion about this to our ward, and I'd like to lead that discussion. And
nobody else volunteered. I mean, it's so tempting.
Yeah, and I got the full gamut of responses from the ward council. Some who said, "Oh, this is great. Yes, we need to have this topic discussed." And some were like, "I'm not so sure about this." And some who were like, "Are you crazy? That is stupid. What are you thinking?"
Yeah.
And in fact, some of the ward council members very directly and privately told me, "This is a mistake. And if you go down this road, bad things are going to happen." And so but then at the same time, I had other members saying, yes, it's about time we had this discussion. Wow. We need to talk about this. So I talked over with my counselors privately, and we decided as a bishopric, we decided, yes, now is the time to do this, and we need to go forward. And this would have been probably in February of last year, February of 2016. And so I decided I needed to educate myself even further before I made a presentation. So I signed up to go to the North Star Conference. I wanted to attend that and learn more from them. And I started to read more blogs. And that's where I came across the Leading LDS.
Oh, great.
I can't remember where I think it was actually Brother Stith.
Oh, okay.
I think he's the one that directed me to that.
Great.
And so I listened to the interviews there. And learned more. I kept learning more and more. And then I realized I need to have personal interaction with people who've experienced this and talk to them about their experience rather than just read about it in a blog. Mm-hmm. I need to educate myself and really understand.
Wow, that's crucial. I mean, because coming from the background that you talk about, where this was just, you know, you weren't going out looking to associate with gay individuals or, you know, trying to be their friend per se, not because you're trying to be rude, but you sort of drew that line. And so you had realized you need to step over and really interact with somebody that experiences this. That's key.
And I would recommend to any bishop or stake president that is thinking about having this very serious discussion with their ward or their stake, before you do that, go and talk to people who have experienced it. Go talk to parents who've had children that have come out as gay. Learn what their experience has been. Talk to the children themselves, and they're probably adults now, many of them, most of them are, probably would be. Ask them about their experience. Ask them about what it was like growing up, because that's where I really learned what this life was like for them. And my compassion just grew as I heard their stories firsthand of the anguish that they went through and the difficulties and the fear that they grew up with and the things that just didn't make sense to them and how they would try over and over and over again to pray this away or to live righteously enough to be blessed for it to go away, and it never did come. And when it doesn't come, the crisis of faith comes right after it, because I prayed, I did everything that I was told to do by my church leaders, and this isn't going away. Mm-hmm. And when I learned those stories, I didn't feel anger or disgust or disdain for anyone who'd left the church at that point. Mm. It was like, you know what? I don't know that I could have stayed in the church, because that was a tough, tough test that these people had. And I feel like, as a church leader, I need to make sure that those people feel like they're wanted and welcomed and loved in our wards, rather than you don't belong here. And I think that the message, for the most part, from people like me has been, you don't belong here, and I needed to change.
Yeah, not that you are saying, going up to them, hey, you do not belong here, but that just the culture and the non-communicative signals or you know, the nonverbal signals, I should say, you know, portrayed that. So how does one, how do you go about finding individuals if, you know, they're not your next door neighbor? How did you go about finding these individuals? And any, and I know you, you talk about a specific story in the article you wrote of one interaction. So how did you go about finding those individuals?
Mostly just from stake contacts here in our stake, working with other bishops and our stake president. He directed me to a couple of people. And so I went and interviewed them. And then as I was putting my presentation together, I had a name come to me that was someone that I had worked with about 20 years previous. And I knew at the time that he was gay. And as I was making my presentation, I remembered some very unkind, unchristlike things that I had said about him. Never to him, but about him. And as I was working on my presentation, I thought, I can't in good conscience give this presentation without going and reconciling with that young man. His name is Steve. Not a young man. He's actually in his 50s, but, but a lot of us in our 50s are pretty young.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So I through social media, I was able to track him down. It took about 3 weeks. Found out that he's still in the area. And I contacted him and asked him if we could get together and visit. And I'm sure he was like, well, this is a blast from the way past, and someone didn't really know very well.
Yeah, it's not like you were good friends or something back then, right?
Right.
Or,
no, we were just
work, colleagues,
work,
right?
Work colleagues, and I didn't really associate much with him at all. But anyway, he agreed to meet with me, and so we met at a Starbucks coffee shop, and I bought him a cappuccino, and I nice. Bought me a hot chocolate, first time I've ever bought a cappuccino.
Nice.
And
you're a rebel here. This is confessions.
He and I sat down, and I said, his name's Steve. I said, Steve, you probably wonder why I want to talk to you. And he said, he looked at me, yeah, I kind of do. What's this about? Because he truly had no idea. He may have thought this was going to be some type of business proposition or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, Steve, I told him I'm a bishop in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I didn't know if he was Mormon. I had no idea about his background. And I said, I am trying to prepare to speak to my congregation about same-sex attraction. And as I was preparing my comments and thoughts, I remembered that you were someone that I worked with back in this would have been the early to mid 90s. And you may not have known this, Steve, but I spoke very unkindly about you, not to yourself directly, but when you were not around, we made jokes about you because you were the only gay person that we knew that had come out. And I was very unkind to you or speaking about you to others. And I want to apologize for that unchristlike thing that I've done and let you know that my heart is changing in that regard. Steve teared up, and he immediately said, thank you for coming and talking to me. He said, I had no idea you'd said anything. No one had ever shared those thoughts with me, but he said, I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. I asked him then for his forgiveness, and he immediately forgave me, just instantly.
Wow, that's
and
awesome.
I thought, that's pretty Christ-like. And then I thought that was going to be the end of my story. Mm-hmm. And then he said, do you want to hear my story?
Oh, cool.
I said, sure. And for the next hour, he shared in vivid detail what his life was like growing up. And I was just stunned. I had already interviewed a few people, but I had never had anyone go into that depth before of what it was like growing up. He grew up in Utah. He grew up in a strong LDS family. He started feeling same-sex attraction feelings probably about the age of about 6 or 7. And he didn't really know what they were at that point. When he got into his early adolescence, he recognized what those were. And he was told over and over that this is evil, this is bad. And so he internalized that, oh, I'm evil and I'm bad. And so he decided that he was going to be the very best person that he could be. He was going to be the best deacon and then the best teacher and then the best priest. He said, I was great. He said, I was a good deacon. I was a good teacher, a good priest. He was called to be the president of his seminary class for Brighton High School when he was a senior. And he went on a mission. He was a great missionary. And his goal and his whole thought was, I will be so good that this will be taken away from me. And after he got home from his mission, those feelings were still there and he was crushed. He said that growing up, he was suicidal many times. He went through depression, and he was in constant fear every single day that someone was going to find out who he was. Hmm. And he said that was horrible to live with over and over and over again. And that, as he was telling me his experience, I was like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. What a difficult, difficult cross he was called to bear. And people like me were not making that cross any easier. Mm-hmm. And I resolved that from this point forward, I'm going to do everything I can to love and support people like that, as opposed to be another person to be fearful of. Mm-hmm. So I came away from that experience feeling like there's so much more I could do. I feel like I learned so much, and I felt like I had a message to really share with our ward. And that message was, we have to learn how to love unconditionally. And we've heard it a lot, you know, charity is, you know, that yeah. the pure love of Christ, and to love the sinner without loving the sin, you know, all that yeah. stuff. But this makes it real. When you can look at someone like this and say, you are carrying a very difficult burden in this life, something very difficult to reconcile, and let me help you do that. Let me be with you and not against you.
Wow. So how did the lesson go then with your ward? Was that soon thereafter that you gave that? Was it a fifth Sunday type of setup?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't actually on a fifth Sunday, because the fifth Sunday in May was around Memorial Day.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't want to lose half the work.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So I did it 2 weeks early. I did it on the third Sunday.
Oh, okay.
And then, but yeah, I thought it went well. Melody, why don't you share your experience? Because yeah. I was a nervous wreck. I was an absolute nervous wreck.
Yeah, Melody, like as you saw him prepare for this, what was it? What was that perspective like, seeing him prepare for it?
When he went to visit with Steve, I was so impressed when he first told me that he was going to meet with him. And I thought, oh, how frightening to, you know, approach him and tell him the things that you said about him. And that takes a lot of courage. So that's, I was so proud of him for having the courage to do that. But I really think that the Lord has been working on him. And that was one of the experiences that he needed to have. He needed that experience to be able to share that with the ward, because that was a very touching moment when he was sharing that experience with Steve. I could see as I was looking around, I was touched. My daughter, the returned missionary, she and her husband or fiance were there too. And we were just shocked at, the spirit was so strong. It was almost tangible. And as I'm looking around to see other people's reactions, they were visibly touched in tears. Many people commented after his presentation. There was a very good spirit. I do know that before he presented to the ward, he said, could I give this presentation to you and you give me any feedback? And I'm really glad
oh, really?
He did.
Oh, cool.
Because as I just had a notebook and was just kind of taking notes as he was presenting it, he wanted to make sure that he didn't come across too strongly, or wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to offend anyone. I just was a wreck, because I really thought that people were going to be back in the back with tomatoes or ready to tar and feather him.
Oh, no.
So I was concerned, because this is it's a touchy topic.
Yeah.
So he presented to me and I took notes, and there were many times that he came across very strongly, and I just thought, I bristled. And I thought, if I'm bristling and I'm already, you know, my heart has been softened too, there's no way you can present this way. So I gave him some feedback about, you cannot say, brothers and sisters, we need to do a better job of, it has yeah. to, I said, you have to share your experience from your heart. You have to take the blame for everything, not the members of the ward. You don't accuse them of treating people this way. You yeah. share your experience from your point of view. And he did. And he said, and shared how his heart was softened. And, it's the eyes of my understanding were open. I think that was the name of that blog. It just came to me. Anyway, he shared it in a very good spirit. The spirit was definitely there. He asked his father to give him a priesthood blessing the day before. We all fasted as a family so that he could present his message in the way that Heavenly Father would want it.
What great guidance for anybody. I mean, not just on the subject, but I know as a bishop, there's a few of those lessons. I thought, man, I know I'm supposed to say this, but I do not feel, you know, qualified or ready to do it. So to fast and get everybody around you involved and to even do a trial run, you know, with your spouse is a great idea. So
that was, I think, probably one of the real keys. I think if I had to say three things that I would do, number one, take the time to educate yourself on what you need to talk about, both from the church perspective, but from real life people who are experiencing this and from parents who have children that are experiencing this. That is number one. Number two, we as a family fasted, as my wife mentioned. And when I got up to speak, before I had said one word, there was already a good spirit in the meeting. I attribute that to our fasting and the prayers of our entire extended family. All of our married children were fasting with us that day. And then, what was the third one? Oh, the dry run. We did this on a Friday, and the content didn't really change, but the order completely changed. And the way that I said things changed. In fact, I was going to teach all the doctrine because I wanted to make sure that doctrine was taught, true doctrine from from MormonsEngaged.org. I nearly every quote in my presentation was from that because I wanted to teach the truth, but I also wanted to make sure that we made it real. And so I spent quite a bit of time teaching the doctrine, and then my wife said, it's not real.
Nice.
And so what she said, you've got to put that story of you interacting with Steve at the beginning. You've got to get people to understand that you have been on a journey here and that you are trying to change and you're trying to help them. You're basically telling them, follow my lead. I'm changing. Come change with me. So by changing things around and talking about my personal experience first, the experience became the real focal point. And then I spent a few minutes talking about the doctrine. So there was no question about this is where we stand as a church and this is what God's laws are. And we're not trying to change God's laws, but we are trying to become more Christ-like in how we teach and implement God's laws. And then I followed up at the very end with the story of Ben Shalati, which is the blog that you ended up reading.
Yeah.
And his blog, in one of his blogs, he talks about how his life was in November of 2015 when the church came out, kind of in a lot of people's views, with a very hard stance on gays. You know, if you are in a gay marriage, you are an apostate, and children of gay people cannot be baptized and cannot be raised up in the church. And that was a difficult thing for the LGBT community to understand. And he talks about his experience where he was down in California visiting with some friends of his when this happened. And he was out to dinner with them and his phone was just going berserk. And he's like, what in the world is going on? And later on, he kind of got caught up and people say, are you okay? Have you heard the news? You know, and he read it and he said it was really difficult to hear the things and read the things that he read about the stances of the church. And he was having a hard time dealing with that. But right after that, he got an email from his elders quorum president, and then one from his bishop, and then from his father, and then from his friends, all of them reaching out to him in love. And he recognized that these are Christ-like people. I don't want to leave these people. Even though this is a hard thing for me to understand, this church is producing the kind of people I want to be around. And that's what got him through that difficult circumstance. And so that's became the message for our ward is let's be that type of person. Let's be the kind of people that we reach out to in love and compassion and understanding and not judgmental of people that feel this way.
Wow, that's powerful. And so how did you say you were connected with Ben? Is he a friend or?
No, my daughter-in-law was a freshman at BYU when he was a senior. And he was trying to date one of her roommates.
Oh, wow.
Back when he was dating. He doesn't date anymore because he just said that just wasn't working out for him. Okay. And so she got to know him then. And I had told my children that I was working on this presentation. And she said, you ought to read this guy's blog. And so she sent it to me and I started to read. And I learned a lot from him. He's been very open and honest about his experiences and what it was like for him growing up. And what it was like coming out and the fears and the concerns that he had and the challenges that he's had. And so he and I emailed back and forth quite a bit and had a lot of discussions back and forth before I made my presentation. I got permission to share his story, shared his picture in my presentation. And I think that really added to the presentation too, because you put a picture of someone that is a real person and then you tell their story and share that with your ward, people start to understand like, okay, this is something I can deal with.
Yeah.
One other thing I was going to mention is in our ward, we made the presentation, or I made the presentation on the third Sunday of May to the adults. And that right at the end of the presentation, I let all of the adults know that I'm going to make the exact same presentation next week to the youth.
Oh, wow.
And so I think it's good for the youth to hear this presentation, but I think it's good for the adults to know what their youth are going to be taught. And so I didn't want to spring this onto any parent like unawares of what? And so we had this presentation. Then the very next week we had the youth presentation, which was exactly the same with one exception. There was a young man in our stake who came out about 11 months ago as being gay. He's 20 years old. I invited him to come, and he shared his personal experience for the last 5 minutes of the meeting.
Wow.
Which made it very real for the kids. But the youth in our ward really didn't have a problem with it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I understand. They've been raised in a culture where this is much more accepted.
Yeah.
And the adults, I have to say that the adult reception was extremely positive. I did have a couple of people that came up to me and said, "This was really hard for me to sit through and listen to, but I'm going to try." Oh, that reminds me, one more caution, one more thing that I did that I would do in a heartbeat again. At the very beginning of my presentation, I told the ward, "This is not a discussion. This is a presentation, and I'm going to ask you to sit back and listen. And if you have a clarifying question, if I say something that's not clear, please ask me to clarify it. But this is not a discussion. We're not going to have a bunch of opinions. I'm going to try to teach you something that I've learned. And I want you to go home and think about it."
Interesting. That's great.
That was perfect because I didn't get a bunch of questions. Well, what about this? What about that? You know, it was just one of those times where people just sat and listened. And I had a couple of members, as I mentioned, that come up and said, "This was hard for me." One of them came up and said, "This is pushing me to think about things I didn't want to think about." But he said, "I think it's going to be helpful." Wow. I had one member that said, "I didn't agree with your position on this, but I'm going to pray about it and I'm going to think about it." And so I've had a few members like that, but for the most part, everyone has said, "Boy, that was a great presentation. The spirit was there, and this is something that we needed to talk about openly as a ward."
Wow. Wow. What a fantastic experience. And anything since then that's happened in the ward, or do people still talk about it? Do they ask you about it? Did it stimulate any interviews?
It did. It stimulated two interviews of people that came in and talked to me about their own experiences in the ward.
Wow.
Nothing really huge has come in the ward that I'm aware of, but I do think that there is a greater openness and a greater understanding in our ward now, which is that's what I really wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there were some people after hearing the presentation who came up to us later and said, "Wow, we just found out we have a gay nephew," or "We just found out." I think that this touches a lot of lives. I mean, you know, extended families, and so there were people who felt like, "Oh, now we know how to approach them with love." And so that was interesting.
Yeah. And I just keep going back to this idea of leadership. Obviously, this is a leadership podcast, that initially the stake president gave you permission to be open to this message. And then you gave your ward permission to be open to that message. And that can be so powerful. You know, sometimes we stand up and, you know, give a general lesson about love, or like you said, using all those cliches that we hear, which are important cliches. I mean, there's many of them are scriptural cliches, but when something is such a hot button in society, to share your experience and give permission for others to have a similar experience, I think is a powerful message I get out of that. Well, any other details we're missing, or I mean, I'll link to the article. I guess Ben invited you to write something for his blog. Is that how that came to be?
Yeah. During this time, I'd never met Ben in person.
Oh, okay.
And then he came out to Utah in early August. And I had told him, "If you're ever in Utah, I want to meet you. And so he came to our home. We had dinner together and had just a wonderful evening together. And he just shared more of his personal experiences with us. He interacted with our kids. And probably 3 or 4 years ago, I would have never purposely invited a gay man to come be in my home. Mm-hmm. And certainly, if there were one there, I would have been watching him real closely around my kids because I would have viewed him as a predator. Mm-hmm. And I look back and think, how naive was I? Mm-hmm. Because he's not a predator. And I would say, just because someone's gay does not mean that they're a predator. I mean, yeah, there are predators in this world, but there are heterosexual predators and there are gay predators, and you mm-hmm. need to be aware of predators. But don't just assume because they're gay that they're a predator, that your children shouldn't be around them, or they have nothing of value to share with you. That is so far from the truth, because they have absolutely wonderful insights and perspectives that without their influence, I would have had a very different year. Yeah. And I think I mentioned this to Ben in one of my emails to him, that some of my most spiritual experiences this year have been talking about members of the homosexual community. Mm. And I would have never thought that were possible just a few years ago.
That concludes my interview with Carl and Melody Hull. What a fantastic couple. It's such a privilege to be in their home in beautiful Highland, Utah, and talk with them. I make so many friendships doing these interviews, and I hope I can somehow carry them on in some form. We need to have like a reunion event where all these past guests come, but so many of them are spread across the world. But anyways, I'll have to figure that out later. I hope you were inspired by his story. What a fantastic story. And the fact that he listened to the leading LDS podcast and that maybe encouraged him along his path a little bit more. What an honor to be a part of that process. I don't think leading LDS was the catalyst of that, but nonetheless influenced that and helped him discover a new perspective and gain a new paradigm. If you discover within yourself maybe a little prejudice there, and again, nobody's asking you to condone anybody's actions or certainly march in parades or politic for certain legislation, but nonetheless, just to love. And what a fantastic way to do that is give others in your ward as the leader, and whether you're an Elder's Quorum president, least size president, whatever it is, as the ward council, give the rest of the ward permission to love. But not only giving them permission to love, but showing them how to do it. Because I think most members, they want to love, they just don't know what that looks like. And it sounds silly, but it's true, especially in the culture we've come from, the society that we live in. We sincerely don't know how to love others that they're in such a drastically different lifestyle than ours. So if you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to help us make some more and continue the mission of Leading LDS to enhance the leadership ability of lay leaders in the context of the LDS Church. You can do that by donating $1 a month to Leading LDS. And you can do that by going to leadinglds.org/help, H-E-L-P. And from there, contributing $1 a month or more. You really can get more if you like. And from there, we can continue with resources and expanding this mission and really making a difference in the world. So until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness, the loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.